It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. This morning, we'll meet a man in West Virginia who returned to his home to help his uncle run their family's historic grist mill.
They say absence makes the heart grow fonder. I just always wanted to come back.
That story's coming up in just a moment. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The region just lost a powerhouse of an environmental science and advocacy with the death of Professor Benjamin Stout. Stout's work as an educator, an expert witness in the courtroom, as well as his work empowering citizens with science, had long-term impacts regionally and nationally. Glennis Board took a look back on some of his accomplishments.
Stout was a Wheeling resident, and for the past 26 years, a biology professor at Wheeling Jesuit University. He was a stream ecologist who dedicated his life to science, nature, and above all, community. Stout shared some of his deepest convictions related to coal mining practices in a 2008 documentary called Burning the Future, Coal in America.
When I look at a mountaintop removal site, a valley fills, I just look at that as a place on earth that whose value was among the best of all places on earth, diminished to among the least of all places on earth.
Stout spent a large part of his career studying impacts of surface mining on watersheds and nearby communities. He frequently monitored waters surrounding ponds built to hold coal mining waste, slurry impoundments. As coal companies complied with rules to limit pollution from power plants, Stout found more of those pollutants instead wound up in those ponds.
Now we need to remove even more impurities from the coal, like the heavy metals. And in order to do that, we've employed more mechanics, but also more chemicals. These are unlined impoundments. I mean, these are in direct contact with surface and groundwater.
Stout was often called as an expert witness in court cases that dealt with watershed impairment. Attorney Joe Lovett recalls working with him during a landmark case in the late 1990s.
It was a case that we brought before Judge Hayden, federal judge at the time, to seek to stop mountaintop removal in the state. The centerpiece of the case really was what happened to aquatic life when we blow up mountains.
During the trial, on a snowy February day, Stout took Judge Hayden on a field trip where Stout did what he loved most. He waded through a stream to find bugs.
I think the judge appreciated that because he was a fisher, and those insects, the mayflies and so forth, were the very kinds of insects that fly fishers use all the time. And so I think the judge really learned from Ben, and I think that was crucial in winning that case.
The case resulted in an injunction against mountaintop removal permits and halting one of the largest ever proposed mountaintop removal operations, Spruce Mine No. 1. Necessary approval for Spruce 1 has been hung up in court ever since. While Stout was good at speaking as an expert with judges, lawyers, and politicians, he was also good at talking with anyone else.
Ben not only loved West Virginia, he loved the people of West Virginia.
Mary Ellen Cassidy was a friend and colleague of Stout's at Wheeling Jesuit University. She worked with him for years studying impacts of slurry impoundments on well water of residents in southern West Virginia. She remembers how Stout was willing to test anyone's well water or stream and how not many residents resisted working with him.
I mean, we would end up sitting down at their table and talking just about everything. He had this kind, open spirit, and that's who he was. He was very authentic, and people sensed that right away.
Because he was able to connect with people and provide them with valid research, he was also able to empower communities to effect change. His obituary notes how his work in communities led to 500 West Virginia families being connected to municipal water supplies. Stout's work became a source of inspiration to other communities, as well as his students at Wheeling Jesuit University.
You couldn't help but just want to follow in his footsteps. Couldn't help it.
Jacob Keeney started at Jesuit in 2011. He remembers his professor would jump at any chance to work with a community in crisis, and that he'd always take students along with him. For Jacob, that meant getting involved during a major chemical spill in Charleston in 2014 that left 300,000 people without water for days.
I got a call from him in the middle of the afternoon during a snowstorm, and he said, "Hey, I'm going to start working on this Elk River spill. You want to join me?" And I said, sure, why not? And, you know, he went down and he tested a bunch of people's water in Charleston and figured out exactly what it was that was getting into their system. And you can see some of his videos on YouTube.
So what's happening is this stuff is going up in your hot water heater and collecting like a ring at the top of the water level. Then when you flush it back out, it's going to form a bathtub ring inside your hot water heater. You're going to have to flush this hot water heater a lot of times to get the shit out of here. That's terrible.
Wow. Is any of that stuff supposed to be in there, the collar-wise?
No. It should be clear.
Stout was eventually hired by a law firm that brought a class action suit over the spill. And because human health studies can take decades to provide conclusive results, Stout and Keeney turned to insect indicator species in streams. They conducted toxicity tests to gauge the potential health effects of MCHM. Exposure to even very low concentrations of the chemical turned out to be fatal for the insects.
I believe that information ended up being used in the class action lawsuit. Years later, they're finally settled that suit, and I think people are starting to get a little bit of justice.
The courts have this fiction that experts are somehow neutral, like machines, and Ben refused to play along with that.
Again, attorney Joe Lovett.
So Ben, not only as, you know, an expert, but as a human being and as somebody committed to protecting the natural world, really, I think, taught all of us how to be good advocates and reminded us why we do what we do.
We are in charge of the custody of these plants and animals, and we're not doing a very good job of it. And it's this helpless feeling. And I see it in the citizens we work with. And, you know, it's wrong. And it makes me feel bad. It makes me feel like I'm taking something from my children.
Stout died of cancer August 3rd at his home in Wheeling, surrounded by his family. He was 60. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Glynis Board in Wheeling.
100 years ago, grist mills weren't just a place where people went to buy cornmeal and flour. They were also community gathering places. But supermarkets replaced the local grist mill economy, and few working mills are still in operation today. The West Virginia Preservation Alliance placed Reed's Mill on the list of endangered properties last year. In the latest episode of Inside Appalachia, Roxy Todd visits Monroe County, where the mill man, Larry Mustaine, is wondering how long he can continue to keep his family's business going.
The drive to Reed's Mill through the misty back roads is long and winding. The county where it's located, Monroe County, doesn't even have a single stoplight. Like so many people who grew up in West Virginia, the man who owns Reed's Mill, Larry Mustaine, says he had to leave the state to see the region's real value.
My mother and dad separated, and we moved away from here. They say absence makes the heart grow fonder. I just always wanted to come back.
He and his uncle, Aubrey Reed, farmed together when he came back to West Virginia in 1975. He spent a lot of his childhood here, helping his uncle inside the mill. When his uncle passed away, Mustaine decided to follow in his footsteps.
So much of what he taught me and what I knew, it's just in me. I don't even know it's there.
The creek that runs behind the mill and which used to power the stone grinder begins here at the top of Peters Mountain.
This creek is unbelievable. It rises out of springs off of Peters Mountain.
This small but mighty creek once powered dozens of mills. Today, only this one remains. Mustaine sells a special heirloom corn called Bloody Butcher.
Bloody Butcher is actually white corn. In other words, if you crack the grain open, it's white inside. Even these red ears are white inside.
This corn has been passed down for generations, just like this mill.
There's a formula that you have to follow to select seed corn from the Bloody Butcher. It's an open pollinated corn. You just plant it over and over. You don't have to get new seed every year like hybrid corn. And he had a formula of what he would pick out, so many reds, so many orange, so many white, so many speckled ears. And I should have wrote all that down. But I just, even though I was in my 40s and 50s after I came back here, I guess I just always thought he was going to be here.
Today, Reed's Mill attracts visitors from all over the state and beyond.
My name is Elmer Napier. I've been here, I don't know how many times I've been here. Met Larry, who's a very interesting person. And I keep coming back. I just come attached to it, I guess.
Napier lives in Florida half of the year and in West Virginia during the summer. He says he's visited 40 mills across West Virginia. Reed's Mill was built in the late 1700s, but is in good shape compared with others in the state.
I've been in four mills, I think, they're still grinding in the state. But, you know, they don't do very much grinding at all anymore in the mills. I think the ones that are here will be here. I think so. Because, you know, it's part of history and we've lost enough of them.
I think it would be a real tourist draw to the area if we could have a few of these mills that are left standing to be fully operational.
Steve Dransfield lives a few miles from this mill. Like Mustang, his family has been farming in this valley for generations. He says Reed's Mill is part of his history, too, and he'd like to help Mustang continue to keep the mill going.
It was always my dream to see all the belts and pulleys going and the water flowing through and the turbines turning and the grindstones grinding. But, you know, what he's able to do, you can come here today and you can see at least a small portion of what the whole operation was.
I sometimes tell people to this day, I don't know that I know what I'm doing. I'm just trying to do what he always did and keep it going.
Mustang is in his 80s, and he keeps this mill going the best he can. But he's getting older, and he says he's not sure who will be here to help take over the mill after him. He hopes that someone in his family, maybe one of his sons, will decide to take it on. But he's not ready to quit yet. Today, he grinds cornmeal and flour with an electric stone grinder. But his dream is to see the millstones up and running again, so the mill will grind cornmeal the old-fashioned way.
The Leffel Water Wheel Company tell me that turbine, that it probably was made in the 1880s or 90s, it's a 10 horsepower, and a new one through them now would cost about $30,000 or $40,000.
And he might be getting some assistance from the West Virginia Preservation Alliance. In 2017, the group listed Reed's Mill as one of the top endangered properties in West Virginia. This designation is meant to highlight the risk of losing the property and to attract attention from the public and encourage others to help restore the building. The group offers a 20% loan guarantee on renovation projects, which basically means they would assume part of the debt if a borrower defaults on a loan. If Mustang switched the mill to a nonprofit business, he would be eligible for more assistance to help maintain and renovate the building. For now, Mustang says he's happy just to continue grinding. He sells heirloom cornmeal, whole wheat flour, and another West Virginia specialty, buckwheat flour.
I'm clear out of buckwheat flour. And I've had people was here the other day going to St. Augustine, Florida, wanted buckwheat. I just can't keep up.
Although drop-in customers can sometimes find the mill open as they pass through Monroe County, Mustang recommends people call ahead to make sure he can give visitors a tour. For Inside Appalachia, I'm Roxy Todd in Monroe County, West Virginia.
You can listen to more stories about people who are working to preserve part of American culture and traditions in the latest episode of Inside Appalachia. Just download the podcast for free wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen on your own time. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.